Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast where I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. Well, that's what we usually do on this podcast, but today is a special podcast in memory and honor of Leonard Nimoy, the actor who portrayed Spock. Of course, if you're listening to this, I don't think I need to tell you he portrayed Spock, and I probably don't need to tell you that, sadly, he died last week as I'm recording this. And I was, you know, it's difficult to explain, well, perhaps not if you're a fellow Star Trek fan, which I imagine you are, that for some reason, I was sad when I heard that Leonard Nimoy had died. Now, of course, people die every day, and that's sad. But I am not someone who is super emotional, much like Spock, and perhaps Spock has influenced that in my life. But I really was sad when I heard that Leonard Nimoy had died. And I was actually deathly ill myself, although I survived, thankfully. And as I was laying in my sickbed, I watched the death scene from Star Trek II, which never fails to make me cry. And it made me cry, of course. And I'm also not someone who cries a lot in movies, but it gets me every time.
Ship. Out of danger.
Yes.
Don't grieve, Admiral. It is logical. The needs of the many outweigh
the needs of the few.
Or the one.
And so that's why I thought it only appropriate to break with the Random Trek format and celebrate Spock. Because without Spock, let's be honest, there would be no Star Trek. Because I believe Spock was one of the main reasons that Star Trek, the original series, was as successful as it was. And why it remained on for 3 seasons. And of course, the interaction between McCoy, Kirk, and Spock also had a lot to do with the success of the show. So without Spock, there'd be no Star Trek. Without Star Trek, there'd be no Random Trek. And I would be sitting here doing a rewatch podcast of Gilligan's Island, for all I know. So thank you, Leonard Nimoy, for saving me from doing that show. Random Gilligan, I guess would be the name of it. So I thought I'd ask a few of my previous guests to share their thoughts about Spock as a character and their favorite Spock moments. And since I'm the host of Random Trek, I get to go first. Now, I think Spock is probably arguably the most popular character that has ever come out of Star Trek. And every Star Trek series seems to have their Spock. Of course, the original series has Spock. Next Generation has Data. The Voyager has 2 Spocks, 7 of 9 and the Doctor. DS9 has Odo. And Enterprise has Captain Archer. No, I kid. T'Pol clearly is the Spock on Enterprise. And I think the popularity of Spock speaks to several things. Leonard Nimoy's great acting skills. The astounding amount of memorable and thought-provoking catchphrases, if you will, that have been that Spock created. Live long and prosper. Infinite diversity and infinite combinations. Or infinite combinations and infinite diversity. Someone's going to correct me on that, so I look forward to your letters. Fascinating. Eyebrow raise, the Vulcan salute, the neck pinch. I mean, I can't think of any other character that has so many immediately recognizable, dare I say, iconic catchphrases and things that are associated with it. Clearly, people like Spock. And I like Spock. Spock is the odd man out. He's half Vulcan, half human. His natures are fighting against each other. And in response to what he feels are his human failings, he really amps up the Vulcan side of himself. which is something I think that many people growing up who are Star Trek fans can identify with, feeling like you're not part of the group, feeling that there's something different about you, feeling perhaps smarter than everybody else, and not understanding their illogical ways. So clearly, Spock has spoken to many people. So that's why, I mean, I said we did a special episode of The Incomparable all about Spock and Leonard Nimoy's career. And I said that Spock is probably not my favorite character. And that's true, but he is certainly one of my top three characters of Star Trek. Just because he has such a large influence on the series as a whole. And he's got many great, memorable moments. Now, for me, the thing that I think about constantly about Spock, and this comes up, I quote this scene probably at least once a month, if not more often, and almost nobody gets it, because I'm a huge nerd, and I am quoting a fairly obscure scene from Star Trek IV, in which you'll recall Star Trek III, Spock comes back, everybody's happy, hooray, spoiler alert. And in Star Trek IV, at the beginning, he's still trying to learn and remember how to be Spock. And there's this great scene where he's standing in front of a bank of computers, and it is testing him. And the computer asks him a question he does not understand.
Computer, resume testing.
Who said logic is the cement of our civilization with which we ascend from EKS using reason as our guide?
T. Planahath, matron of Vulcan philosophy.
Correct. What is the molecular formula of humanium sulfide crystals? White queen to section 5, grid 6, queen takes knight, rook takes queen, white pawn to section 5, grid 7, pawn takes rook. Checkmate. What significant contribution to bioengineering was made in Lucarian outposts on Clint?
The universal atmospheric element compensator.
Evaluate and conclude. A starship sensor is indicated as being pursued so closely that it occupies the same space as its pursuer.
Correct.
Identify object and its cultural significance.
Klingon mummification glyph.
What were the principal historical events on the planet Earth in the year 1987?
Correct.
What was Kira Kim Thaw's first law of metaphysics?
Nothing unreal exists.
Correct.
Adjust the sine wave of this magnetic envelope so that anti-neutrons can pass through it, but anti-gravitons cannot.
Correct.
What is the electronic configuration of gadolinium?
Correct.
How do you feel? How do you feel? How do you feel?
I do not understand the question.
And so I often say, correct, because I find it amusing. But that is one of my favorite Spock moments, because he just doesn't understand the question of how do you feel. He answers all these super highly technical questions, but the one thing that stumps him is how do you feel. Now let's turn it over to Jason Snell, who was my first guest on this podcast ever, to tell us what Spock meant to him and share his favorite Spock moment.
I love Mr. Spock. How can you say more than that? I love Mr. Spock. I can't remember life without Mr. Spock. I always loved Captain Kirk too, and I think one of the great things about Spock is how Spock made Captain Kirk better. If you isolate Captain Kirk, he's like every other hero ever. He is the swashbuckling captain. He will save the day. He will get the girl. All of that stuff. But Spock, and McCoy too, but especially Spock, makes Kirk better because he is there to question Kirk, to often provide a moral compass, or in some cases, a moral dilemma where Spock will have a coldly logical approach to something, and Kirk has to argue the humanistic side of it. So Spock becomes a great foil for Kirk in those cases. And then other times Kirk gets to explain to Spock, or through an argument with McCoy, find a middle ground between what McCoy wants, which is often kind of irrational and very human, and what Spock wants, which is on the other side of the spectrum. And so Kirk finds a middle ground. So, strangely enough, one of the things I love about Spock is how he makes Kirk such a much more interesting character. I also love, I think, some of growing up a fairly sheltered life in the country, Spock is the first person I ever saw deal with prejudice that I can remember, like by a lot. And I think specifically of the scenes in Balance of Terror where Spock manages to get the view screen on and we discover that the Romulans look like Vulcans, and this jerk on the bridge of the ship who's already been a problem because he's a racist now is convinced that Spock is a traitor and wants him off the ship. And I love how Spock handles that and the dignity that Spock has. Kirk has no place for it too, which is great to see the authority figure saying, nope, there's no place for that on this bridge. But Spock, even when he screws up later and presses the wrong button and sends out a ping that reveals the Enterprise's position, he handles it with aplomb and actually drags the jerk out of the phaser battery and saves his life. He leaves the poor innocent guy who was getting married earlier in the episode in there to die, but he does save the one guy. And I always thought that was an amazing thing about Spock, just that he handled that situation. I really had no experience with what I know now to be essentially racism. And that was what Spock was dealing with, and he dealt with it in the best way possible. He turned the other cheek. He acted with dignity. And Captain Kirk laid down the law, too, which was delightful to see. My favorite Spock moment is not him dragging the jerk out of the phaser battery. It's the moment right before, I think, what a lot of people have as a favorite Spock moment, which is the moment where he sees Captain Kirk is alive in a mock time when McCoy has tricked everyone by injecting him with the triox compound that's actually a sedative. And he smiles and says, Jim, and then they lord it over him. And he says, well, I just meant that I was excited that the Starfleet didn't lose a fine officer. I love the scene before that, the one on Vulcan, where Spock comes out of his fugue, out of his amok time state, and realizes what he's done.
Live long, T'Pau, and prosper.
Live long and prosper, Spock.
I shall do neither. I have killed my captain and my friend.
But he's won, but everything's bitter, and he doesn't want to pring, and T'Pau gives him that salute, the Vulcan hand salute, and says, live long and prosper, Spock. And everybody's got that moment. I have it on a refrigerator magnet of Spock with his hand up and the cyclorama, orange-red cyclorama of Vulcan, the set of Vulcan behind him, along with those styrofoam rocks that were there. And this is this iconic visual moment. But if you know the context, it's completely different. It's not a victorious or happy or anything. It's Spock's darkest moment. As far as he's concerned, he just killed Captain Kirk. His life is over. And so when she says, live long and prosper, which we think of as this wonderful greeting, Spock's retort is, I've killed my captain and my friend. I shall do neither. Gets me every time.
Next up, Glenn Fleischman.
Spock, I think, meant a lot to me because I didn't identify with most other people in the original series. And then seeing him come back again and again was great, too. I always really loved Leonard Nimoy as an actor. And I remember after watching him on Star Trek, seeing him in something as interesting as a recorded video stage play of Vincent, a show about Vincent van Gogh's letters to his brother, Theo. Nimoy was a terrific humanizer of an interesting character. I mean, Captain Kirk was always, he was sort of headstrong and brilliant, but also could make arbitrary decisions and often wrong. He let his emotions guide him, but he was a good guy, right? In the end, he was a good guy. And Dr. McCoy, I quite liked because he brought a voice of sensibility, but he was often too risk averse in situations in which risk need to be taken. And having someone who was, even though he claimed to be driven entirely by logic, I think Spock was written and certainly portrayed as someone who is always, there is clearly always a deep conflict. And even in the original series, we saw that revealed, the Vulcan mythos, in which they really are passionate people, so passionate and violent, they have to suppress their emotions and wrap them tightly so that they can function. And so they get criticized for their use of logic, but in fact, their logic is born out of necessity so that they can survive. I thought both, as I say, the writing and especially Nimoy's characterization of Spock brought that incredible sense of identification, because I was a nerd and I thought about logical things and math and physics and computers, and seeing that somebody could have a position of respect. You know, I think at some level, you know, Nichelle Nichols was very important to African Americans and people of color. In her day, Martin Luther King famously asked her to stay on the show because she was one of the only people. She was a professional and equal with the other people on the bridge, and to a much lesser extent. But I think that Spock occupied a little of that role for me to say, like, even if you're an oddball, you're somebody who, you know, is driven by logic, that you can have a place in that sort of society. And so for me, I picked a moment that I think from the later series, from Next Generation. It's the episode, well, it's Unification 1 and 2. And it's, for some reason, I found it was, I think, one of the sweetest episodes or sweetest scenes in all the episodes is when Spock meets Data and they're working to try to subvert some computer system. And I think it's hilarious to watch them talk about the humanity. So the android who wants to be human, it can't maybe experience emotions, but we sort of see that he does even without his emotion chip. And we see Spock, who spent all his time trying to achieve a state of pure logic. And it's just a wonderful, sweet moment. Both the actors, I mean, Brent Spiner is just a wonderful actor as well. And the two of them together, I just found it very special. So listening to Data ask Spock about whether he misses his humanity having accompanied this, you know, taken this path in life.
Ambassador Spock, may I ask a personal question?
Please.
As you examine your life, do you find you have missed your humanity?
I have no regrets.
No regrets. That is a human expression.
Yes. Fascinating.
And that's probably the best fascinating ever. I'm not sure there's a better one. I know there's an episode of the original series in which Spock gets high and plays a lute and so forth. But for me, that scene encapsulates both Nimoy as an actor and what I'll miss about him and his performances and Spock as a character. I think many of the Star Trek actors, Nimoy among them, they came to symbolize more because they were almost like visitors from the future. And Nimoy's embrace of what he meant to people, I think, was very important, a very important thing. As a Jew, I love having knowing as another Jew, including one who holds up a religious sign for his live long and prosper salute. But it was also just having someone with that much humanity and caring about other people involved in a show about the future, and then bringing that sense to the present in everything he did. So Ali will miss Leonard Nimoy, and I'm glad he had a long and accomplished life and was so appreciated, and I certainly appreciate him.
Matt Gemmel, who was my guest on the first supersized Random Trek, weighs in with his thoughts about Spock.
For me, Spock was, I think he was the archetypal Star Trek character, actually. The alien who wasn't so different from us, but different enough that the character raised interesting questions for us to think about, much more so than the broadly drawn sort of villains and monsters and things that we saw on the show every week. Spock was the outsider character within, and so he became a mirror for ourselves, for humanity, for the people actually watching the show. And I think that when we watched the show and saw that possible future, and we saw how unremarkable it was to have a woman on the bridge and to have a Russian on the bridge alongside Americans, when we saw how ludicrous it was when these alien planets had nuclear wars, or when they had racial discrimination amongst the sort of half white, half black aliens, I think it was really Spock's eyes that we were seeing through, not our own. He was the observer, and the calm rationality of the character was the yardstick for how we measured our own progress in the future. You know, Kirk's rashness or whatever was so clear to us because of the contrast with the outsider observer character of Spock. And equally, when we saw the hints of a savage past for Spock's people and base impulses that he still had to contend with every so often, and his, of course, his own troubled dual heritage, half Vulcan, half human, those things made him comfortably enough flawed for us to sort of form a kinship with the character and to find him all the more fascinating. I think that my favourite Spock moment was not actually in the original Star Trek series, and that's quite fitting because the legacy of Spock is Data in The Next Generation, and Odo in Deep Space Nine, and the Emergency Medical Holographic Program in Voyager, and T'Pol in Enterprise, and even Worf in many cases. Sci-fi is about getting far enough away from our current lives that when we turn around and look back at the Earth, at our civilization, at our culture, our point in history, we can see things clearly. And for so many of us, Spock was our guide on that journey, and much more relatable than some of the more prototypical other characters. Which was why it was so nice that the character of Spock continued right through the Star Trek franchise. And my favourite moment was actually during The Next Generation, at the end of the episode Unification Part 2, which is of course a Spock double episode. And it's where Spock mind melds with Captain Picard to share Picard's memories of Spock's father, Sarek, who's recently passed away himself. Those memories that Sarek gave to Picard in the previous episode of the same name, Sarek. And we see the grief, this very, very human grief, spring onto Spock's face. And the reason it was such a beautiful moment is because the arc of the Spock character is complete at that point. He's making peace with his humanity and his need to express these emotions, but also with his feelings for his father, as he presumably also finally sort of learns with this sort of telepathic echo of his father's true affection for him. And it's just such a uniquely Star Trek moment where a character can reach across even from beyond death and provide resolution.
Ironically, you may know Sarek better than his own son does. My father and I never chose to meld.
I offer you the chance to touch what he shared with me.
I was terribly sad to hear of Nimoy's death, but because of his place in the Star Trek universe, or universes now, he'll never be forgotten. I appreciate the chance to say a few words about him today.
Steve Lutz, who got an original series episode that features Spock, is here to share his thoughts.
Spock is the reason that anyone today has ever even heard of Star Trek. Without Spock, I don't know if in 1966 they were in the habit of canceling series mid-season, but I definitely don't think the original series makes it past its first season without Spock. So without Spock, you never get your Next Generations or your Voyagers or your Babylon 5s. I mean, just talking logistics, try to imagine the original series without Spock. I mean, the other two guys, the two leads, they're basically nuts, right? I mean, Kirk is just like a walking hormone, and Bones, he provides sort of a moral conscience to Kirk, but he's also a cranky old bastard, with a salad fetish, who's prone to fits of frothing rage. I mean, these are two dudes who are, you know, they're basically ruled by their passions. They need that logical, intellectual self-control that Spock brings to the table. I mean, just purely as a matter of survival. I figure, with Kirk and McCoy fending for themselves, they get through two, maybe three missions before either the Enterprise blows up or Kirk gets court-martialed. Alone, I think each of these guys eventually gets drummed out of Starfleet, but you put the three of them together and you have one halfway competent starship captain. So, you know, he's necessary as kind of that third member of the Trinity that kind of gets them through. But I think more importantly, I think Spock is what got the audience to tune in week after week. And by audience, I'm talking about, you know, your 1966 nerdy sci-fi kid. You know, all those kids watching, they all wanted to be Kirk, right? I mean, handsome, debonair, looks good with his shirt off, sort of, boldly trashing the galaxy and pulling bed duty with green-skinned slave girls. But the guy those kids could really relate to was Spock. I mean, he was smart and he was weird. No one else really understood him. You know, he's an eternal outsider. He's a virgin and likely to remain one. So, you know, you can see where some of the young kids viewing this at the time might have drawn a few parallels. You know, in these early episodes in the first season, you know, he's just constantly taking crap from his peers and even his supposed friends. I mean, Bones is relentless with the green blood cracks. But, you know, Spock, he's above it. He doesn't care. He lets it all roll off. You know, part of that's due to him being a Vulcan and, you know, not really having an ego to bruise. But we know that's not entirely true. And, you know, so I think that those 1966 kids, they saw, and, you know, and later kids who watched in syndication, obviously, they saw this guy who was a little like them, you know, the outcast who his strengths are his intellect. And, you know, maybe he deals a little bit better with the abuse that's usually heaped on him than they might. But, you know, what a nice kind of role model for those guys. And, you know, they wanted to tune in and see themselves on that screen every week, at least to a small extent. You know, of course, what that led to was them showing up at school with ill-fitting blue shirts and pointy ears and, you know, making it all worse for themselves. But at least they could escape into Spock once a week. The genius thing, I think, that Leonard Nimoy brought to the role is that he took it seriously. You know, he could have done some sort of goofy, I am an alien monotone thing, or he could have gone like overly broad and really campy like Shatner, for instance, or, you know, most of the rest of the aliens that show up on the show from time to time. But instead, he chose to take kind of the subtle route and treat the character with some respect. You know, not immediately. In the first couple of episodes, he's a little bit shouty. You know, he hasn't really figured out what he wants to do with the character. But once he settled into the role, he brought, I think, a surprising amount of dignity to a man wearing blue eyeshadow and eyebrow pencil and huge fake pointy ears. You know, but the great thing is that once he'd sort of established that baseline of that the quiet, ruminative Spock, it seems really striking when an episode would let him stretch out a little bit, you know, or would call for him to highlight his emotional human side. And these, I think, these tend to be my favorite Spock moments. You know, there's the episode where Spock gets, he gets hopped up on space spores and he falls in love, for instance. Or when he mind melds with a crawling lasagna. And, you know, he starts weeping piteously and shouting, "Murderers!" That's a great bit.
Chamber of the Ages.
The Altar of Tomorrow. Murderers!
Stop them!
Kill!
Strike back!
Monsters!
And, you know, obviously Amok Time, I think, is really the showcase, you know, for that first episode of season two when, you know, the kids were Spock crazy and they wanted to, you know, really give the fans what they wanted. And, you know, they let him really kind of go wild with the emotions in that one. And I think there's a particular moment in that episode that is probably my all-time favorite Spock and Nimoy moment, which is, it's fairly early on in the episode, and he's, he's deep in the throes of the Ponfar, and the nurses come by and brought him some purple Vulcan soup, which he throws on the wall out in the hallway, and he's dealing with the all-time case of space blue balls. And he doesn't want to be bothered. A message comes in from Uhura calling for him, and he's not pleased. And there's this monitor in the foreground that's some sort of communicator. It's supposed to be a vid screen or something. And he's so angered by this message from Uhura that he starts shouting, "Let me alone!"
Communication to Mr. Spock. Lieutenant Uhura here. Captain asked me to inform
you.
Let
me alone!
And, with three, good, hard, downward thrusts of his fist, he just crushes the hell out of this vid screen. And it becomes readily apparent that there are no electronics whatsoever inside this thing. And it's just, air-filled, molded plastic. And the way it crushes is hysterical. I mean, it smashes like you would expect, like a Barbie dream house to, if you smashed it with your fist. And the amazing thing, and I think it speaks to the brilliance of Leonard Nimoy as an actor, is he pulls it off. I mean, as ridiculous as it looks with this stupid thing crushing, in a very non-electronic way, he seems legitimately, enraged. And, I think a lesser actor than Nimoy would have had trouble getting through that scene, without just breaking out in tears of laughter because of how stupid it seems. But, not Nimoy. He pulled it off perfectly. And it's a wonderful scene and really absurd. But, also a testament, I think, to how seriously he took the character and his job as Spock's actor. Leonard, you'll be missed, but thanks for what you brought in Spock. And thanks for, making Star Trek something that could last as long as it has. You'll be missed.
Nicole Wakelin, even though she was on vacation, took some time out of her schedule to record a couple of thoughts and pardon the audio.
Okay, so it's kind of a sad time, and I'm actually in a very happy place. I'm in Disney World right now, and that's where I was when I heard the news that Leonard Nimoy had died. And despite being in the happiest place on Earth, I was not very happy and was a little teary-eyed standing in line for some nameless ride I can't even remember. And then Scott sent out an email and said, "You guys want to send in your favorite Spock moment, your favorite Nimoy moment." And I've been thinking about that for several days, and I couldn't come up with just one. I mean, there isn't one. Every time he raised his eyebrow, that's a favorite Spock moment. Every time he gave that Vulcan salute, that's a favorite Spock moment. And every time he did anything that was so Vulcan unfeeling, but somehow very feeling at the same time. There were so many things that people remember about him. You remember him on Star Trek. You remember him from In Search Of. Those who followed him even more closely probably know his work with photography. He was really involved in the arts. And I think what I'm most going to miss about Leonard Nimoy and about Spock is just kind of sort of knowing that he's there. He was sort of that grandfather we all had, that we all knew, that we had some memory that related back to the first times we saw Star Trek, which was very likely when we were little kids. So he was tied up in those childhood memories of growing up. And he really can't ever be replaced, and he will be terribly, terribly missed.
Gene McDonald, who emailed me about this very idea, sent along this clip.
I was a little girl in the 60s. Everything about the original series was simultaneously tantalizing and scary. Spock made such an impression. Those ears, the nerve pinch, the mind meld, all these alien things seemed within the realm of possibilities to a small child. Compared to Spock, the rest of the cast seemed pretty unremarkable. I liked that he was always calm, never losing his cool. That made some of the scarier parts less scary. There are so many great Spock moments. One of my favorites is in the Doomsday Machine. It's a great episode for Spock. Kirk is temporarily away from the Enterprise, trying to fix the USS Constellation, which has been wrecked in an encounter with a very big, very scary, planet-killing machine. The Constellation's Commodore Decker has taken over command of the Enterprise and is on a suicide mission to attack the planet killer that annihilated his crew. When Kirk is finally able to communicate with the Enterprise, he orders Spock to relieve Decker. The resulting face-off ends with the great line,
"Mr. Spock, relieve Commodore Decker immediately. That's a direct order."
"You can't relieve me, and you know it. According to regulations..."
"Blast regulations. Mr. Spock, I order you to assume command on my personal authority as captain of the Enterprise."
"Commodore Decker, you are relieved of command."
"I don't recognize your authority to relieve me."
"You may file a formal protest with Starfleet Command, assuming we survive to reach Astora Base. But you are relieved." "Commodore, I do not wish to place you under arrest."
"You wouldn't dare." "You're bluffing."
"Vulcans never bluff."
Dave Kalos here to share his thoughts about Spock and Leonard Nimoy.
I'm very sad that Leonard Nimoy is no longer with us, and I'm happy to talk about Spock and why I love Spock so much. I started watching Star Trek when I was very young with my dad. My dad was a big fan of the original series, and he would invite me to watch with him, and I felt it was such a special thing that he asked me and just me to come and sit on the couch and watch what I considered to be his show. I felt that was very special, and I absolutely fell in love with Spock on Star Trek. He was my favorite character. He's cooler than Kirk. He's cooler than Bones. He's cooler than the Enterprise. He's just absolutely, hands down, my favorite character. He's so compelling, and he's an alien. And he had the pointy ears, and he was so wildly competent at everything he did. And the first strong memory I have of Spock from watching back then when I was young is from the episode Operation Annihilate. You remember the crazy brain cell looking thing sort of attacked Spock and left him in such horrific, constant agony, just piercing, almost indescribable pain that drove other victims to madness. And in fact, Spock even tried to take over the ship at one point because he was just so mad and with the agony he was living with and trying to fight it. And I remember being so upset when I was little that these things were hurting my TV friend, Mr. Spock, my favorite character on the whole show. And Bones' cure temporarily blinds him for a while, and it was a very rough episode for Spock, and I was upset that he was in such pain and such misery, but still working so hard to save his friends.
"Dr. McCoy, Captain,
Spock,
these restraints will no longer be necessary, nor will your sedatives, Doctor. I'll be able to return to duty. I apologize for my weakness earlier when I tried to take control of the ship. I simply did not understand."
"What is there to understand, Mr. Spock?"
"I'm a Vulcan, Doctor. Pain is a thing of the mind. The mind can be controlled."
"You're only half Vulcan. What about the human half of you?"
"It is proving to be an inconvenience, but it is manageable. The creature, with all of its thousands of parts, even now, is pressuring me."
As an adult, I grew to love the complex relationship between Bones and Spock. They love sniping at each other, especially from Bones to Spock. They really just sort of dig at each other whenever they get a chance. But you know, beneath that is tremendous respect and real friendship. They would do anything for each other. And that was abundantly clear in many of the episodes. I mean, there were future odd pairings in subsequent Star Trek series, like Odo and Quark and even Data and Geordi. But it really all started with that, the frenemies, I guess, relationship between Bones and Spock that was, it's such a delight to me even today. It's fun to watch them rib at each other and give each other a hard time, knowing that they would do anything for each other when push comes to shove.
Lastly, Ged Mayhew shares these touching memories, which, as I told Ged when I listened to it, I teared up a little.
My feelings about Spock. What a loaded question. The last couple of days have been really hard. I mean, for a lot of people like me, Star Trek has meant so much to them all of their lives. And losing Leonard means losing a huge chunk of Star Trek. You know, when you think about Star Trek, you probably think of Spock. At least you do if you're from my generation. And you grew up on the original series and the show in syndication. So when someone brings up Star Trek, my mind naturally goes right to the character of Spock. And that's a huge tribute to him and Roddenberry and all the people who wrote the show. They created such a wonderful character, maybe even the most beloved character in all of science fiction in Spock. And knowing that then we're not going to get any more new appearances of Leonard as Spock is tough to take, but I don't think he'd want us to be sad. He'd want us to celebrate him and what he accomplished. So that's what I've been trying to focus on the last few days. And I've talked a lot about Star Trek with my friends. And one of the things that I've learned and I've really come to appreciate is how the character of Spock evolved over the course of 40 years from his initial appearance in the cage all the way through. I think the last time he played Spock was probably in The Big Bang Theory, doing a voiceover of Spock with Sheldon. And over that entire range, I love the way that Nimoy crafted and molded and evolved Spock from being simply this alien who needed to control his emotions and try to figure out those puzzling humans who were all around him, to gradually embracing his emotions. He changed over the course of the original series. He changed quite a bit. But then when we came to the movies, especially in Star Trek, the motion picture, I think Spock realized that logic wasn't enough. You know, he needed to have emotions and balance them to make him a complete person. And then in The Wrath of Khan, you know, we see that a little bit more. And especially in Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, he realizes the value of being surrounded by those who love him and who he can love back. You know, there's that scene with him and Kirk.
Yes, Uhura. What's wrong?
I've located Chekov, sir. They're taking him to emergency surgery right now.
Where?
Mercy Hospital.
Mercy Hospital?
Oh, that's in the Mission District. They report his condition as critical.
He's not expected to survive.
Jim. You've got to let me go in there. Don't leave him in the hands of 20th century medicine.
Admiral, may I suggest that Dr. McCoy is correct? We must help Chekhov.
Is that the logical thing to do, Spock?
No, but it is the human thing to do.
And I just love that. I love that evolution of Spock. My favorite Spock moment? I think my favorite Spock moment is, it's going to go against what a lot of people say as they're probably their favorite Spock moment. I mean, I'm sure there's so many of them and it's hard to pick, you know, Mock Time and Journey to Babel and all of these other episodes and movies and everything else. So many great quotes and everything. But one of my favorite Spock moments comes actually in The Doomsday Machine. And it's funny because it's not a Spock, super Spock heavy episode, but it is one that highlights one of my favorite parts of Spock, and that's his relationship with his friend Captain Kirk. You know, Kirk is stranded on the Constellation, and he's apart. He's not in command, and Commodore Decker has taken over the ship, and he's hell-bent on destroying this massive weapon that has destroyed several planets and is now threatening the Federation. And so Spock is kind of helpless because he's being outranked by Commodore Decker. But there's a moment when they finally get back in touch with Kirk. Kirk's like, why isn't Spock in command? And Decker's like, I should be in command. Every rule according to the book, I'm in command. And Kirk's like, no, you're not. I left Spock in command. I didn't leave you in command. Give me Spock. You know, and Spock gives him the lowdown about what's going on and everything. And Decker's like, we're going to turn and attack. And Kirk's like, not with my ship, you don't. You know, Mr. Spock, I order you to relieve Captain Decker. And Decker's like, you can't do that. According to regulations, I'm in command. And Kirk simply says to Spock, blast regulations. I order you to assume command on my personal authority as captain of the Enterprise. And without missing a beat, Spock turns to Decker and says, you are relieved. That, I love the personal connection between Kirk and Spock at that moment. It highlights their relationship that they have across all of these episodes and movies. And it's something that is shown over and over in the series. Spock and Kirk are both willing to risk their professional careers, their lives for each other again and again. And it's just another example of Kirk and Spock doing what they need to do to help each other. And it's such a satisfying moment. I love that Spock doesn't care. He doesn't care about regulations, even though he's the logical one, even though he's the emotionless one. He just immediately relieves Decker. And because Kirk told him to do it, you know, even though Kirk didn't really have the authority to do it, you know, Spock did it anyway. That's one of my favorite Spock moments.
So thank you, everybody, for sharing your thoughts about Spock and your favorite Spock moments. And thank you, Leonard Nimoy, for creating such a memorable character.
Space, the final frontier. These are the continuing voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Her ongoing mission to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life forms and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.